Well, today is the memorial for St. Augustine, who died on this day at age 76 in the year 430 as the Vandal hordes descended upon his beloved city in North Africa. He's been one of the most influential figures, not only in Christian history, but in Western civilization as a whole. He's also been one of the most important saints in my own spiritual journey. I've been deeply moved by his writing, even as at times I've been confused, and increasingly over the years, sometimes infuriated by his conclusions. St. Augustine used to be read routinely as part of classic literature in humanities courses throughout the Western world, but sadly his work now languishes on library shelves while the world plays Pokemon Go. Okay, that was an elitist, a very elitist comment, I admit it. If you're into Pokemon Go, go for it. Well, since his day falls on Sunday this year, I thought I'd do something I rarely do, which is preach the calendar. That is, share how it is that God's grace, working in and through someone that we memorialize as Anglicans, might yet inspire us. Well, Augustine was brought up in the 350s and 60s in small town North Africa, which was then a vital part of the Roman Empire. His father, Patricius, was a non-Christian, and his mother, Monica, a deeply pious but not very intellectual member of the Catholic Church. Maybe, with some adjustments to be made, we would say in today's terms, a fundamentalist, or a bit of a fundamentalist. Like the story of Jesus' upbringing, which can't be told without Mary's, St. Augustine's story can't really be told without Monica's. And in recognition of this, the Church memorializes St. Monica on the day before her son, so yesterday, August 27th, even though it is not the actual date of her death. The relationship they shared was intense and conflicted. Augustine reacted against her unsophisticated faith, and after his parents had scrimped and saved enough to send him to the school of Carthage, he felt the freedom to break from her upbringing and allow himself to be drawn in to the excitements of university life, and particularly to the philosophy and literature of Rome. Maybe some of us can relate to being drawn in to the excitements of university life. The world was at his feet. He settled down with a mistress, and she bore him a son. Again, sounds all very, very modern in some ways. As he says about this period, I was in love with loving. Now, this is exactly the kind of thing Augustine would say. Brilliant little aphorisms that capture a jewel of insight. Although, truth be told, at this point, by love, he mostly meant sex. Looking back on this period in his confessions, he summarized with, "Give me chastity, Lord, but not yet." Most of what we know about St. Augustine and his journey comes from his book, Confessions. When he wrote it at about the age of 42, he had been Bishop of Hippo Regis in North Africa for less than a decade. It was a type of writing that had never been attempted before, a memoir of self-analysis in which he told the story of his struggle with himself, the struggle with trying to decide what he wanted to be, and his struggle to find a truth that might bear not only his personal anxieties, but make sense of the world. He crafted this monumental work as a direct conversation with God. The entire book is a prayer. Well, at university in Carthage, it wasn't just sex he loved, but the glories of language as well. He became a teacher of rhetoric, which at that time was a ticket to a high-flying political career. So it was on to Rome and then Milan and a potential speechwriting job for the emperor himself. But at the same time all of that was going on, he was increasingly tormented by anxieties. What is truth? How might I find it? Where does evil come from? What's it all for? While this was going on in his heart, his mother, Monica, was beside herself with worry for his soul. Weeping profusely, she poured out her concerns to a local bishop who said to her, "Do not fear, the son of such tears cannot be lost." And so, encouraged, she redoubled her efforts and her prayers. Prayers and efforts redoubled. And one of St. Augustine's most famous aphorisms is, "Pray as if everything depended on God, work as if everything depended on you." And I have no doubt that Monica was in his mind when he wrote that. Convinced that career success would not bring the fulfillment he longed for, Augustine turned to Manichaeism, a popular sect of the day that taught that good and evil were equal and opposing forces. After about 9 years exploring this, what you could call a hybrid faith or sect that incorporated bits of Christianity with bits of Eastern religion and philosophy, he became dissatisfied with its account of evil, especially after meeting one of the faith's chief prophets and finding him a bit of a fraud, a bit of an intellectual lightweight. In reaction, he turned to Greek and Roman philosophy, but could not find relief for his troubles. In Milan, he became fascinated with Bishop Ambrose, a person of self-confident culture and whose sermons, rich in language and ideas, made up for what he took to be the crude stories of the Bible and the simplicity of Monica's faith. At that time, he again realized that his chief battle was not with the ideas of Christianity, but with his own desires, his own in particular sexual desires. At that time, it was assumed that to become a serious Christian, one had to, all things being equal, live as close to the physical condition of Jesus as possible, which was assumed to be the celibate life. And Augustine was not about to do things in half measures. Another one of his aphorisms is, "Christ is not valued at all unless he is valued above all." Augustine's ideas about sexuality and celibacy, again, they were a reflection of the wider culture. These ideas, though, through his powerful pen and prose, shaped the world of Christianity in the West for over 1,000 years. And though many of us don't share the views he held now, we need to try and understand Augustine in his own time. And so as he moved closer to the Christian faith, he took some momentous and fateful steps. Steps we might now think as tragic. He decided to end the 15-year-old relationship with his mistress, a woman he never names, perhaps because, as some feminists have said, he is just a patriarchal boor, but maybe it's because he was trying to protect her identity. He had already become a famous man, and maybe he wanted to give her the dignity of anonymity. This decision, which many of us now might consider a tragedy, was encouraged by Monica. But the result left him near a nervous breakdown. Sitting in a friend's courtyard, agonizing about his inability to fully commit to what he now believed to be the truth, he heard the voice of a child reciting a playful chant in the adjoining garden. "Tole lege, tole lege." Take and read. Take and read. The book he had in hand was Paul's epistle to the Romans, which he now opened at random to chapter 13, verses 13 and 14, which reads, "Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to gratify its desires." This was enough to give him the courage to make the commitment to Christ and to celibacy, which I've said for him went together. As he said, again famously, talking about his journey, and indeed all spiritual journeys, and the serenity and faith that is yet possible for all of us in this room and at all times. You have made us for yourself, referring to God, of course, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. As such, he is in many ways the patron of the spiritual journey, qua spiritual journey. In the communion of saints, he prays for us in our doubts, in our fumbling attempts to find solace in this self-help book over here and this guru over there and that pop psychology book somewhere in between. Saint Augustine, though he ultimately came to reject many of the paths he walked on, saw them ultimately as pointers to the grace of Christ himself, and would urge us to do the same. In fact, he encouraged exploration. The world is a great book, he said. He who stays home only reads one page. He urged listening to the other, humbly learning what we can along the way, even if the messenger or the message is imperfect. In concert with our gospel text today, he asked, "Do you wish to rise? Begin by descending. Do you wish to be great? Think first about the foundations of humility." As such, St. Augustine brings together two things that in our modern world we often tear apart: a passionate concern for the individual journey of the spiritual seeker, and a passionate belief that such a quest cannot be completed without organized religion or the institution of the church, her leadership, and the sacraments. A person cannot have God as her father without also having the church as her mother, he controversially claimed. Now, whether we end up buying the extended warranty that goes with that statement or not, it gets at a point which is crucial to make in our culture. To avoid an image of God that is simply crafted after our own ideas and projections, we need the humility to recognize that meaning is crafted in community. This reality of spiritual quest and commitment to the community is alive and well here at St. Matthew. In that sense, we are an Augustinian community in which the Spirit of Christ is leading us into dialogue and action. Now, I could go on and on about St. Augustine and share how the West is indebted to his thought. In fact, if you go to your local seminary library, you will find an encyclopedia of Augustinian studies and thought. He's the founder, for instance, of just war theory. He said, "The purpose of war, when necessary as a last resort, is always peace." His contemplative thought became foundational for Benedictine life, and Augustinian monks still teach as professors in universities, as well as teaching contemplative prayer to inmates in many prisons. Questing and questioning, but in the end, love. In the end, God. I end this preaching the calendar sermon with a famous passage from the Confessions that deeply moved me as a younger man and still does. "Late have I loved you, O beauty ever ancient, ever new. Late have I loved you. You were within me, but I was outside, and it was there that I searched for you. In my unloveliness, I plunged into the lovely things which you created. You were with me, but I was not with you. Created things kept me from you. Yet, if they had not been in you, they would not have been at all. You called, you shouted, and you broke through my deafness. You flashed, you shone, and you dispelled my blindness. You breathed your fragrance on me, and I drew in breath, and now I pant for you. I have tasted you, now I hunger and thirst for more. You touched me, and I burned for your peace."